Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. The advanced design ferry Susitna is truly a unique vessel. Can go fast, can operate in ice. It has special lifts and hydraulics that are not found on any other kind of boat. Cost $78 million of our hard-earned tax money. And yet there's now no purpose that can be found for the boat. Originally built to be a ferry running between Anchorage and Mattsu's Point Mackenzie, the docks that would have been needed on either end to get vehicles on and off the ferry were never built, and it's become a headache for Mattsu as they pay to mothball the ferry in Ketchikan and look for a buyer or something that can be done with the vessel. So that's our topic today, the ferry Susitna that was built to run between across Kinnick Arm between Anchorage and Mattsu's Point Mackenzie. How did we end up with this boat, and what are we going to do with it? How is the Mattsu Borough going to deal with it? And I've got guests in the studio today who are right at the middle of that discussion. John Moosey, who is the borough manager of Mattsu Borough. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Warren Keough, who is an assembly member of Mattsu Borough. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
And before we talk to Mr. Moosey and Mr. Keough and get to your calls, we're going to talk for a few minutes with Lisa Diemer, who's a reporter with the Anchorage Daily News, covered the construction of this unique ship. And going back in time to before either of our guests were involved or were at the borough, to look at the genesis of this project and how it came to be with us. Thanks for being with us, Lisa.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So this was something that was funded by Senator Ted Stevens when he was in his height of his powers in the Appropriations Committee, and I guess he directed the U.S. Navy to build the ship?
Yeah, it eventually got to the U.S. Navy. The first earmarks, I think, came through the Federal Transit Administration, which is usually mainly concerned with urban mass transit. This was a fairly unusual project for that agency. But I think in 2005, it got over to the Navy, and that allowed far more dollars to flow through the Department of Defense.
And was it originally requested by Mattsu, and what was the purpose of that request?
Well, I think the Mattsu Borough was trying to really find a way to help its port at Point Mackenzie take off. That area hasn't really done that well compared to other parts of the borough, looking at growth elsewhere. When I wrote kind of my first big story on this, I mean, there were almost no boats calling on Point Mackenzie. So they were looking for a way to kind of to boost that area. They thought ferry service between Anchorage and the valley would be a way to do so. So I think that's where the idea started.
And where came the unusual design for this vessel? Why not just build a traditional or buy a traditional ferry? This is a pretty unusual ship, right?
Right. Yeah, it's unusual in several ways. I mean, there's nothing ever been built like this. And in fact, when I first heard about this and researched it, I was surprised they built it. I mean, this is a combination. This is part amphibious assault vessel, part Alaska commuter ferry. So you just think from the start, how could they make such a thing? It has a barge deck that can raise up or can lower for beach landings. The idea of it came about because normally landing vessels, you know, that can pull up right on the beach, they're unstable because they need to have a shallow draft, and a shallow draft vessel is going to be inherently more stable than one with a deep draft. Deep draft can't pull up on the beach. So that's where the idea came from, to have this kind of the barge, because the Navy was interested. The Navy had put out four proposals to build its next generation landing craft, and that's part of where the genesis for this one came about. There was a retired Navy captain, Lou Madden, who graduated from West High School and was, by the early 2000s, working for Lockheed as an engineer, and he had this idea of how to make a better, different kind of landing craft. He knew the Mattsu Borough was interested in a ferry, and so he's really kind of one of the keys to how this all came about.
And then it was built in Ketchikan, which is not where Navy vessels are usually built.
Right, and that was also a big push. I'm trying to think about how it actually got there. The Alaskans involved wanted it built in Alaska, basically, and the Navy agreed because it was so unusual, and a big shipyard is used to doing things a certain way. This small little shipyard in Ketchikan was able to invent procedures for making this vessel, and they built it. I mean, it. You know, I was on it back in 2011. I went kind of on a test trial of it, and it works.
And yet it's got all these different. It's a high speed vessel, and it's got all these lifts and things that make it kind of complicated to operate and expensive to build. It sounds like.
The Navy wanted a high-speed vessel. They didn't end up getting it because one of the problems is when you're building two different things. I mean, it also had to be an icebreaker to work in Cook Inlet, and even the icebreaking mechanism being because it has twin hulls, so it has this barge deck in between the twin hulls. The twin hulls go under the ice to act like knives or plows or something, lifting the ice up and breaking it that way versus a normal icebreaker that goes atop the ice and crushes it from on top. And so it's heavy because it's designed to break ice. Because it's heavy, it's not that fast. So the Navy, while they call it sometimes a fast craft, it's not really one. It was supposed to go 30 knots, and I don't know what the top speed has been overall, but something under 20 knots, I think.
So then the Navy got out of the picture after they tested it. They're done with it. Did you have the impression, and you may not know this, that this was something that Senator Stevens decided he wanted and stuck into the Navy's budget, or was this something the Navy, particularly wanted and that they got their money's worth out of it?
Well, they wanted the landing craft. I don't know that they wanted this kind of joint venture with the Matsuburo. And I just went back over my story back from 2011, and the former head of the Office of Naval Research said at the time that it's fair to say that this was a congressionally initiated project. But he liked the boat once it was built, and that was Rear Admiral Jay Cohen. I mean, he liked it, but it. This combination, half amphibious assault vessel, half commuter ferry, that's not necessarily what the Navy wanted.
Doesn't sound like that was necessarily what Matsu needed either. Well, thanks very much, Lisa. Lisa Deemer from the Anchorage Daily News for giving us sort of the primer in the ferry Susitna and how it came into existence. Appreciate your being with us.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to peel off now.
Thanks very much. Yes. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth, and we're going to be talking this hour about the Matsu ferry, which is not operating, and this actually hasn't made it to Matsu yet, and what will be done with it. And I have two expert guests in the studio, and we would welcome your calls and questions as well. If you want to get on the air with us today, the phone number is 550-8433, 550-8433. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we take emails, too, at hometown@alaskapublic.org. City Manager Moosey, it sounds like you've got quite a challenge on your hands in figuring out how to deal with the situation where you've got the ferry, it's in Ketchikan, it's costing you a lot of money just to keep it there, but you don't have the docks to operate it here, and it doesn't sounds like you don't have the money to build the docks or the money to operate the ferry if you did. How are you trying to this is your daily headache you have to come to work to deal with. What's the status right now?
You're correct. It's a challenge. We have really sought many options for it, including using it ourselves, but mostly trying to find another government agency who can use this because we do have an FTA grant obligation. Approximately, specifically for the ferry, about $6 million, and that was to outfit the ferry for public transportation use. So we have that obligation. So it's not as simply as we can put it right here. If it's not done in a way that's going to be agreeable to FTA or an FTA agency, then we have that liability. So that's...
So you'd have to give back the $6 million.
$6 million back. And so that kind of limits our opportunity. The landings for both Port McKenzie and Ship Creek have been designed, although they are pretty pricey. And we would need financial help to get those. That, in my estimation here dealing with this, that process should have started 5-6 years ago to be ready by the time we took the boat is ready to go. That did not happen for reasons I'm not aware of. But this kind of runs smack into the middle of the other priorities of the Mat-Su Borough and the Mat-Su Borough Assembly, you know, such as a rail project, such as improving our transportation infrastructure in the borough, you know, dealing with our great growth and putting in quality schools. And so we're a growing community. We have a lot of needs. And this has really not climbed to the top of priority list. And that's why I believe the landings have not been put in.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you were to start building those now, waiting years, you'd be paying to keep this ferry on ice all those years, and it would be extremely expensive just to have it sit there, eh?
Only about 4 or 5 months on ice.
on ice or on storage, yeah.
Yes.
It costs something just to keep it sitting there.
That is correct. And
and what is it? It's something like $70,000 a month?
Or? Well, we had it $70,000. Because we had it in a full ready-to-go state. We've been trying for the past, a good attempt in the past year, on either selling it or finding a partner or someone else to use it. Because that has not happened as we anticipated, we've been able to reduce that $70,000 a month to just about $28,000. And we've done that by looking at reducing our insurance, not having it in a ready-to-go state, not exercising it on a monthly basis, and changing some security costs and some security parameters.
Yeah, still $1,000 a day is a lot of money. Warren Keough, you're a Mat-Su Assembly member. I guess you've had enough. You're leaving the assembly. Didn't run again this time. But it sounds like you thought the ferry was a good idea, and you've maybe changed your mind or think that now it's time to try to get rid of it.
That's right. Early on, I was a proponent of the ferry, and again, this is an issue that some of us weren't very familiar until we came to the assembly table to play. So, in my case, the past 3 years or so. However, after exploring all the options and in my view, the only viable option at this time is to cut our losses and sell the ferry. And indeed, that was the demeanor of the assembly about a year and a half or so ago. And there's been an over a year long effort to where we've marketed the ferry, but we're still sitting on the ferry in Ketchikan. So that hasn't happened.
Right. And it sounds like entities, people come and look at the vessel. They're excited at first, and then when they realize maybe how unique it is, their interest wanes.
I suppose so. It is a very unique boat. It's a prototype. Lisa Diemers had a comment or two. You know, as part of the creation of this vessel, it's half ferry, half landing craft, and they call it an expeditionary craft. And not only is it half of those, but it's also half size with the military. Originally, the plan was to have the vessel twice as large it is, but it was downsized considerably.
Just to get it built. I guess it went double the budget and construction. It was supposed to cost something like $30-35 million, and ended up costing almost 80.
I think that's right. So presently, the vessel that we have is about 200 feet long. It has a capacity for I think about 130 passengers and 20 vehicles. Originally, it could have accommodated much more. And in the past, there was some studies that showed that if they had the ferry here and we operated after some 5, 6, 7 years, you could reach a break-even point. But frankly, after looking at it now, I don't think there's any way that it can be operated without being subsidized. And I think it's fair to say the Mat-Su Borough, the assembly, certainly is in no... they certainly don't want to operate it, and no one that I know has stepped forward to say, we'll do it. If they are, I'd like to hear from them. Mm-hmm. The state hasn't been interested to date. We've approached the Alaska Marine Ferry System. No takers as of yet.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller. Tom is calling from Anchorage. Tom, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, this is an interesting project that has been going on. I mean, part of the original reason was to demonstrate a need for traffic across Kinnick Arm to justify the Kibata Bridge. But one of the problems is people get focused on this back and forth between Anchorage and Mackenzie. Cook Inlet is not high seas, and this ship isn't designed for high seas, but the western shore of all of Cook Inlet is basically inaccessible now. There's places like Williamsport down in the south that has a road up to Pyle Bay on Lake Iliamna. That's a proper destination, and granted this ship would have to run with the tides and operate as a will call, it could serve, and the whole issue of docks is also impressive. The Anchorage is focused on only having a dock down at Schiff Creek, but we've got a gravel beach in Anchorage at Point Wernsoff, northwest of Anchorage International Airport. There's even a road down to that beach near the Aspen treatment plant, or there used to be. The vehicle or the vessel could on and offload vehicles there and serve really all of Cook Inlet, clear down to Kachemak Bay, English Bay, Port Graham, Drift River. If Tyonek wants to build a dock, it could serve that. It wouldn't be real frequent. It could haul wind generator parts to Fire Island. In short, it's a versatile vessel that does not have to serve its original purpose.
Well, let me get a response to that, Tom. You've given us a lot to chew on there. Borough Manager Moosey, have you looked at those ideas of using it sort of as a, could go all over the Cook Inlet area?
Yes, we have. And there is certainly a need throughout Alaska for this service. And in fact, we've explored the situation that we're dealt with is we have just wonderful ideas such as these, but nobody to partner with and step up to actually operate and cover the costs. Also, too, when we put it in a different purpose other than transportation, public transportation, we still have the issue of FTA. Is that something I think we could hurdle? We could. But in like everything else in government, it comes down to dollars and cents, and where are you going to put your dollars and what priority are you going to have on those dollars?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that he mentioned kind of raises a question, which is it was built to be a sort of a military landing ship, so why does it need these fancy docks? Why can't you just pull it up on a ramp or a beach?
You certainly could, but most of the services that we need is usually for transportations of goods and supplies. Can you get the goods and supplies off a gravel barge or whatever onto it and get it on and off? Mm-hmm. That's a question. And from my understanding, I'm kind of limited because I'm not yet a ferry guy as far as putting it in service. I guess I am a ferry guy, but not an in-service ferry
You're
guy
getting quite
yet.
An education, aren't you?
the routes need approval for the routes and that sort of thing. And there's needs, but to pay for those needs is really the challenge of this whole dilemma that we have.
Mm-hmm.
This is Tom again.
Yep.
This notion that you've got to subsidize this boat presumes that you're not, that roads and that 34-mile, almost third of a billion-dollar railway spur that doesn't even get to the dock at Point Mackenzie isn't subsidized speaks a lot. I mean, we're a maritime state. We have a ferry system that operates. It doesn't operate in the black. It's subsidized. So is the Puget Sound ferry system, the day boats down there. We don't seem to want to push out, and Cook Inlet is a perfect example where you'd think the standard Alaska pro-development types will go, hey, we can get to Drift River and fix that oil facility over there. We can get to Williamsport, and with winter roads, you can truck materials possibly even to Bristol Bay. I hate to sound like an advocate of the Pebble Prospect, but that's the way into there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And this vessel, as a public transportation vessel, would serve that purpose rather well. It needs a little bit of refit. You need some crew quarters and a galley, and I don't know what else it might need. I've never been on it. But the point is that you're going to subsidize public transportation no matter what. And I'll listen to the rest of the show. It sounds like an interesting discussion.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Let me turn to Warren Keogh, Mat-Su Borough Assembly Member. Did people think that it was going to be a break-even thing at the beginning? It seems like it would be improbable that it would, and especially now that it's so much smaller. And I guess, follow-up question, how much do you think the Assembly would be willing to pay to operate this thing if it's not going to be in the black?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure exactly what the mindset was of the assembly a decade or so ago, but I think it's fair to say right now the Matsuburo Assembly has absolutely no appetite whatsoever to subsidize it. I say that as one I'm often a minority voice on the assembly, but if there's but I think that's a fair statement. I don't. They, as I mentioned before earlier, I think there was over a year or so ago, I think a unanimous or near unanimous decision to cut our losses and sell the ferry.
Because when we talk about a subsidy, you're really talking about charging people property taxes and sales taxes on their homes and on their purchases, and then taking that money to run a ferry that they don't may not want to use.
That's right. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have no sales taxes, and it'd be on the backs of the landowning property taxpayers in the borough.
So, Warren, you have been on the boat, is that correct? And what did you think of it?
I think it was a great experience. I think it's an extraordinary vessel. I'm not sure how well suited it is for its intended purpose. I mean, I think there's certainly a need for a ferry service between Anchorage and Port McKenzie and other places within the Upper Cook Inlet would be great. So I think it's a great concept. You have the largest urban area in Alaska with a short distance to the fastest growing area in the state, which is the Matsuburo. So, and there's only one way in and out of Anchorage towards the Matsuburo on the Glen Highway. So that's it. So there does need to be an alternate transportation route. So ferry, good concept. I'm not sure, but again, the vessel. The day that I was on the water with the vessel, there were a couple of Navy crews coming to visit. They had some possible options in mind, and the prospect that the Navy would assume title to the or take the vessel back over. They were extraordinarily impressed with the boat, as was I.
Yeah. Unfortunately, doesn't quite fit what it was needed for, I guess. Sean is calling from Anchorage. Sean.
Hi, am I on now?
You are. Go right ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This might seem a bit outlandish, but considering this is at least partially a military vessel, is there any possibility it could be used by the Coast Guard in the Arctic Ocean or perhaps going back and forth across the Bering Strait?
I'll turn that over to Borough Manager Moosey.
Yes, we want the audience to know we do not tend to wage war on the municipality of Anchorage from the borough. But yes, Sean, we probably a little over a year ago, we went to D.C. to entertain the Coast Guard on this issue. They fell in love with the boat and the possibilities. But when this was done 12 years ago, I think our national world politically has really changed. That was the era of earmarks, and you could get grants. And they were undergoing just limiting their type of vessels to save cost and save training, that sort of thing. They said if they took the MV Susitna, it would take 2 years to call out the procedures on how to be used and another year for the training before they even put it in service. And it was so much different than the standardization of their boats that they, really turned down our offer. We were kind of disappointed because that's one thing about this boat. You could see this used in a variety of different ways, but because it is so different and because of the different costs and different challenges, everybody so far has politely declined.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Sean. Some of this seems frustrating because it seems like there's so much bureaucracy involved in dealing with it. And I wonder if that's a factor here. I know you probably don't want to criticize other government officials, but is that a factor here? Or is it really just the uniqueness of the vessel and that you can't make it work because of how unusual it is?
First, we're continuing to seek to make it work, and I would say it's a uniqueness more than rules or bureaucracy, that sort of thing. We all, we're all kind of responsible to the public, making good financial decisions, and a lot of times it comes down to that. Assemblyman Keough mentioned it was half the size it was originally intended to be. That kind of limits the original option. Because it's unique, you need more more people on the boat than normally, and so that, I mean, that drives up your cost for staffing to operate it. Because it's an icebreaker, it's heavier, so it uses more fuel, and so you have all those things plus the uniqueness. It makes it more challenging to really kind of find the right niche. Plus, it was designed for Cook Inlet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cook Inlet's kind of unique, our water, and in a situation there. And so there's not a whole lot of places like us.
Yeah. So, Burr Assemblymember Keogh, I know you need to leave in a couple of minutes here when we go to the break, but I didn't want to let you go without telling us what you think should be done. I mean, assuming that we can't find a buyer for it, you've been looking for a buyer for a long time. Should the boat be scrapped? Should it be laid up on the beach? I mean, what do you have an idea of what you'd like to have happen to it, given that a buyer isn't available?
Well, the assembly has looked at every option that we can think of, including scrapping the vehicle, bringing it up here for wet layup, bringing it up here to dry dock at Port McKenzie, leave it where it is in a wet layup status or not. So we've looked at all different kinds of options. It seems to me, however, that it's just a matter of how much red ink the borough is willing to bleed or how much the assembly is willing to bleed. And so my perspective, the single best option right now is to leave it in Southeast Alaska in a wet layup status and continue to market it and hope that we have a viable offer come along and cut our losses. I hate to say that. I'd like to see a ferry operating between Anchorage and Port McKenzie. I think the majority or many of the assembly members, for reasons that aren't clear to me, think we can bring the ferry north and make a go of it. But without someone stepping forward to operate it and incur the cost of operation of the ferry at a deficit, that's not going to happen. And whoever it is willing to do that, they haven't stepped forward. So.
Yeah. Hopefully they're within the sound of our voice. Well, we're talking about the Matsu Ferry, Susitna, the ferry that has hasn't been able to be put into service and the conundrum that it's created for the Matsu Borough. My guests are John Moosey, who is the borough manager, and Warren Keogh, assembly member, Matsu Borough, who's going to be leaving us now as we go to the break. In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking more about the ferry and what the options are. And some other matters in front of the Matsu Borough, and we don't talk about Matsu Borough matters on the show every week, so it'll be an opportunity to visit more with the borough manager, John Moosey. And we'd love to hear your calls, questions, and ideas as well. I'll give out the phone numbers for you to get on the air when we come back from the break. So please stick with us. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. We're talking about the Matsu Borough today, and in particular about the ferry Susitna, which was built by the Navy for testing of a new technology with the idea that it could also be used as a ferry running between the Port of Anchorage and the Point McKenzie Port in Matsu. But that never happened. The ferry was built, but the docks on either side were never built. They proved to be very expensive, and the operations sound like they'd be very expensive. And so now the ferry is sitting in Ketchikan and incurring some dockage fees while the borough tries to figure out if it can be sold or what can be done with it. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the situation or anything else you'd like to ask Borough Manager Moosey. The phone number here is 550-8433. That's the Anchorage Bowl number, 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, the number is 1-888-353-5752. And email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And if you send me an email, I can read it on the air and get your question answered.
One question that I'd have, which is kind of a fundamental one for you, Borough Manager Moosey, is this. We've been discussing the idea of building a Kinnickarm crossing for, well, I guess since the 1950s, but it's been funded, and there's a group looking at it called Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority, KABATA, and a lot of discussion about, well, how much traffic would there be, and would it pay for itself, and so forth. But if a ferry that only carries 20 cars is really not viable, and it's not worth it to the borough and the city of Anchorage just to build docks for the ferry, how can it make sense to build a bridge?
Well, Charles, I think your questions go hand in hand. I think the urgency on not subsidizing a ferry is really predicated on the thought that the KABATA project is going to happen very, very quickly. And I think even a caller said the ferry was originally out there to prove that a bridge was needed. And so, and essentially that the ferry would kind of peel off service and need once the bridge was in. I think there's been the last 3 or 4 years, there's been quite a bit of momentum moving towards KABATA, which really lessens the need, I think, for a ferry service. And, you know, that's certainly something that the Borough Assembly and the Borough is excited about that possibility. It got close 2 years ago, I think, in the state legislature. And I think they're, from what I'm hearing, they're going to make a really strong attempt this next legislative session to kind of push that forward.
Mm-hmm. So you feel like there is traffic that needs to go between those two points?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think once that bridge is done, the Port McKenzie area will probably, in my guess, in a generation, could be the second largest city in the state within a generation.
Because people who live in Anchorage will be moving over there and commuting?
Really moving over there and commuting. We have 14 square miles of industrial space. And that we're pushing hard gives us a great opportunity for economics. But being so close, being, 3 miles, 4 miles, 5 miles away from downtown Anchorage, and the recent studies by the Municipality of Anchorage show that their growth is going to happen cannot be contained within their boundaries. They're just running out of space.
You know, I've heard that, and it strikes me as I see all this empty land around Anchorage, I don't understand how they come to that conclusion, but I know that I've heard that same information. Chris is calling from Palmer. Chris?
Yes, sir. I appreciate Hometown Alaska and the opportunity to speak. And I just wanted to say thank you to Borough Manager Moosey. He inherited a very difficult situation with the Susitna, and he's been working very hard to reduce costs and to get this thing squared away. But I just want to inform your readers that oil's decreasing fast through the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Pretty soon, we have to plan for a post-oil economy. And I look at the borough and the 9,000 acres of industrial land and the port of Port McKenzie and the Kinnickarm Crossing as the way that the state of Alaska can keep kids from having to move away once oil revenues decrease to the point where the pipeline stops. So I really appreciate what the borough is doing to create industrial and resource development land and export potential, because that's the only way we're gonna keep our economy alive post-oil. And I just wanted to say thank you very much to the Borough Manager Moosey here today.
Yeah, okay. Well, I didn't hear a question there, but...
Thanks, Chris. Yeah. It's thanks for his kind words. And
it sounds like you've had a real quick education in marine ship sales that you probably never expected to get.
That is true.
That's true. Karen is calling from Willow. Karen?
Yes, hi. I have a question. From what I understand, when the Susitna was built, there were no docks or anything in place. Why would they spend the money to build this ferry without having all the support systems set up and ready to go?
The borough manager wasn't here at the time, but you can sort of speculate on it, I suppose.
Karen,
yeah,
did...
Does that not strike anybody as kind of odd and, just plain silly?
Well, I have to. I mean, I think that is one of the questions that's sort of running around in people's minds. Do you want to take that, John?
Karen, yes, I would have liked to see those and to be in place by the time we received the ferry. I don't know specifically what was going on 5 years ago. And, you know, this is a challenge that we have in a, you know, a borough that's growing very rapidly. There's so many needs, and priorities are always, you know, always adjusted. About the same time, I think the beginnings of the Port McKenzie Rail Project came forward, and I think we could literally build a new school every year in the Mat-Su Borough because of the number of kids. And in those demands, you know, what makes my job, and especially the assembly's job, very difficult, trying to match the dollars with demands. But I agree, this would be a whole lot different story today if we had landings for the Susitna Ferry. I think the question would be is, how come you're charging me $15 a trip as opposed to $10, as opposed to what in the world do we do with the boat?
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Karen. You know, it raises a question, not a question, I guess, but a pattern that we've seen in Alaska over the years of build it and they will come. And I don't want to editorialize too much, but, you know, I've been here all my life, and I've seen, I guess we've got a railroad station at the airport, which is almost never used. There's grain terminals in Valdez, which have never been used. Point McKenzie itself was a big milk production project built by the state of Alaska, which kind of fell apart. And there was another project up in Delta Junction to produce barley to support the cows at Point McKenzie. And, you know, you can go on and on and on to think about projects that were a lot of them paid for with so-called free money from the feds. And it was at one time it was very easy for folks to ask for those projects and have them appear. And I guess it's unfair to Mr. Moosey, because he's a relative newcomer. He's been in the job for a couple of years, and but I wonder if there is a sense now that we need to look more carefully at these projects before we request them in terms of the operating costs and how we carry them forward. And do you feel there is a philosophy about, you know, in terms of that? Is there a lesson learned from this?
There certainly is a lesson to be learned, but right now, things have changed. You cannot get an earmark anywhere, and so that opportunity has dried up. And I mean, it's real easy to focus on the failures. There's been many successes throughout Alaska. I mean, look at the inventor of the light bulb, Thomas Edison. How many times did he fail before he got the light bulb? And we're all appreciative for that. So personally, I am very hesitant about governments really being prototypes and being out there on the leading edge of technology, because there is great cost, but when you succeed, it's just a success. Private industry does that; they can extrapolate that and get their money back out of it and learn from their failures. But usually, a failure in the public means, guess what? We made a mistake. We'll never, ever do this again. And we lose that knowledge and information we learned from the failure. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there can be lessons learned from this. And believe me, I'm learning every day.
Yeah. Well, you kind of got stuck holding the bag in a sense in dealing with this. Now we have Caroline calling from Anchorage. Caroline?
Yes, Charles, thank you very much for giving a brief history level lesson. For those of us that watched in frustration as the money got dwindled away, the fact that there's not earmarks coincides with the fact that we lost our greatest person in terms of getting us funding, and that was Senator Ted Stevens. But and while things change, in some cases, they remain the same. So that history is important. I remember when people like Charlie Elder testified before the legislature, and he urged spending for infrastructure, not for businesses, because with the infrastructure, the businesses will come. And this is, in a way, infrastructure, but at the same time, the projections for how many people are going to be using a bridge, how long is it going to take to pay for it, and it's all money in, money out. So what we spend it on is crucial. And boondoggles, it's always exciting to cut the ribbon. It's hard as the devil to get the money to take care of the maintenance for the project, whatever it happens to be. So I appreciate you giving a history lesson. Many folks that were not here do not share the frustration when we see money bleeding away. And as that person pointed out, the funding from oil, since it is a finite resource, is going to be going away, and it's going to be virtually impossible to replicate that with an equal amount of expenditures from another resource base. And I worked on the TAPS line, so I have an awareness of what that is. But again, it's we can't ignore how we got where we are. We
All
have
right.
to look at it very carefully. So thank you very much.
Well, thanks for the comment, Caroline. It's Hometown Alaska. We're talking about the Mat-Su Borough, in particular this ferry Susitna and what will be done with it. And we welcome your calls in Anchorage. The number is 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email here is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And we've got about 15 minutes, so if you have questions for the Mat-Su Borough manager, please please call in or send an email, and we'll get an answer. So I know that this issue has taken up a tremendous amount of your time, but you're still running a borough. You just had an election. You've approved some bonds and got some other projects that are happening. What are some of the more fun parts of your job rather than trying to sell this boat?
Well, Charles, I love my job, even the challenge of the ferry. Uh-huh. I came from Minnesota, and the area I was with, just north of Twin Cities, was really fast growing for 12 years. Then the economy hit, and it's like the tap turned off, and I spent the next 4 years kind of unwinding things. So I am just absolutely thrilled of what we have going on.
You're in a fast-growing area.
Yeah. The opportunities here, the willingness for opportunities, and participation of the citizens. But we do have, you know, quite a few good things going on up in the borough. Or 2 years ago, citizens voted a $214 million school bond levy for school projects. We're working on quite a few. We have Valley Pathways that is under construction right now. And we have the Mat-Su Day School under construction. Very shortly, we're going to have the new Kinnick KGB High School Middle School. I guess it's going to be named Reddington High School Middle School. It's going to be going up, following by the elementary school there. We're going to do a new Iditarod School. If you've been up there for football games, I mean, you know, our fields and athletic facilities are second to none in the state. So exciting times on the school construction front. Roadway, also same 2 years ago, we had $32.5 million bond approved for roads to get people back and forth through the valley. Just this last election, they did another $16.5 to be matched by the state. So people of the valley put their money where their mouth is. It's like they see these needed services, and they go to the ballot and voted. Don't ask about taxing on their liquor, though.
Yeah.
That went down in flames. So anyways, we have some good things. Our next assembly meeting, we just completed a 22-square-foot addition for assembly chambers and some offices of the historic Dorothy Swanda Jones building. We're really excited about. That has been a project that's been discussed for over a dozen years, and we got it done. We have 7.5 kilometers of Nordic trails. They got put in at Hatcher Pass. The chalet that we have, warming house, is under construction right now up at Hatcher Pass.
And that's down at sort of the base of the road there on the Fishhook Road rather than up above?
Or? No, it's up above.
Oh, okay.
Right over the viewing area. It's just the views up there, wow, are just absolutely incredible. We just completed the library up in Sutton. We have another one going in Talkeetna. Wasilla got positive votes for their new library. So a lot of fabulous things are happening up in the valley, and I'm just excited to be a mm-hmm. part of this, and our relationship with the schools, the local cities, and the borough seems to be as better than ever.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cooperation.
And you've got a big project that's, I guess, I don't know if it's 100% state funded, but largely state funded, to put a rail spur out to Port McKenzie. What's the status of that project?
We have four segments underway right now. About two-thirds have been funded. We still need $101.5 million to go, and that will get the last segment. And then we'll have the rails, ties, and ballast on there. So Our plan is if funding comes normally, we're going to have traffic on there by 2016, which gives us a tremendous economic opportunity. We have our teams going out working with resource developers this past week, next week, trying to move forward on those projects. And like I said before, we have 14 square miles of dedicated business industrial space right there.
Mm-hmm. So when you say segments that are underway, are they actually out constructing them, or you mean?
Absolutely, yes, wow. Constructing them. The foundation and base are in, are going in right now.
What happens if the legislature doesn't appropriate the other money? Is it then just, is it not usable, or?
It's usable. It's a good investment, and we will look for another way to accomplish okay. that. But we are really counting on the state legislature.
I see. So it's sort of a phased appropriation, and it's sort of like they need to keep it going, or the project won't be completed, or you'd have to find $100 million from somewhere else?
It won't be completed in a time that we would like it completed.
Okay. And was there some, I hate to ask in ignorance, but was there some environmental controversy related to that or opposition to it? And what's the status of that?
I would not say it's controversy, mm-hmm. But there has been some challenges. We just had another review in court, the sixth one, 2 weeks ago, and the court ruled in our favor. And one of the things that kind of bothers me is the project spent $10 million going through the environmental, as required by law. The financial impact statement is probably about 5 inches thick, and we agreed to 101 conditions, putting those through, and we've met all those. So the idea that this is not environmentally compatible and we are not stewards of our land, that kind of burns me. We are very conscious about fish passage, our moose population. We have done numerous culverts, a culvert replacement for fish passage, and fish is really a vital part of our economy from our lodges, our guides, bringing people from out of state, bringing your mom and dad up or your brothers to come fishing and hunting. It's really important to the Matsu Valley.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when this is completed, it will be connecting the port there, the Port McKenzie, to the rail line. And what kind of projects do you anticipate using that, or what's sort of the vision for how that'll be used?
Well, both in and out traffic. Certainly, we think we have a huge opportunity for resource on development. We are the closest part of the United States to the Orient, and there's been customers there for a variety of different resources, but also to bringing material into Alaska and getting it to into the Fairbanks area, into Central Alaska. Is really really important. We think there's a big opportunity. Right now, we have groundbreaking for Central Alaska Energy. It's a 10 million gallon tank farm, and that will do low sulfur fuel. It's I think it's going to really drive down some oil and gas fuel prices in Alaska, and who doesn't want to see that happen? Good, aggressive company that is one of our newest tenants out at the port.
So what does that project consist of? They're going to be storing fuel there for the airport, or what's that?
Storing fuel there for resale, mm-hmm. And really help get it into the interior of Alaska.
Oh, okay. One question that is begged is that we have another port that obviously is just a couple of miles across the water, the Port of Anchorage. A lot of money is being invested there. Why are two ports needed so close together?
Cook Inlet is a great place to have a couple ports. We are a different port than the Port of Anchorage. The Port of Anchorage brings in resources, containers. They supply practically all the needs from outside for the state of Alaska. Extremely important. We are not competing with them. We see ourselves as a partner and a resource development port. Different type of materials, different type of commodities going in that may not be good or mixed together. Our port director, Mark Van Dagen, who has been there for a good decade, hard worker, and Port of Anchorage, Mr. Wilson. We're really forming a partnership with them and seeking how we can partner and be good neighbors. And I would say right now our relationship between the borough and the municipality of Anchorage and the ports has probably been the best it's ever been.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's Hometown Alaska. We have a few minutes left. If you have questions for the Mat-Su Borough Manager, John Moosey, now's the time to call. The number is 550-8433, 550-8433. From outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And our email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So we promised a discussion about the ferry, and we kind of didn't finish it in that there was an idea that was presented to, I guess, when the high tide that was coming recently, to put the ferry up on shore and, I guess, kind of dry dock it there. And it sounded like there was some excitement about that idea, but then it didn't work out for some permitting and so forth. And I guess I wonder, there were others who said, well, you'll never get it out of dry dock if you do that. And then there was another quote in the newspaper, gosh, you know, you're going to have to buy new life jackets and do a bunch of, spend a lot of money to get the thing going. Is it time in any way to just say, this didn't work, we just need to bite the bullet with the $6 million and get rid of it? Or where do you see it going now if you can't sell it?
I see a potential partnership or another government use.
Mm-hmm.
The idea and the concept and the engineering behind doing that, I thought was brilliant on using the high tides to bring it in, as opposed to heavy equipment that might damage, is to kind of float it right into place and mm-hmm. Secure it, pump out the water and secure it. I mean, that was,
so
I think, pretty genius.
Long-term storage idea until use is found.
That is correct. I think because we kind of changed the philosophy and having it ready for sale or use, the wet layup is working pretty well for us right now. And it's just trying to find, you know, that right opportunity and right partner. I think everybody I talk to would like to have it used in Alaska and used in the Cook Inlet. You know, the question it comes down to is the priorities, you know, of the funding. To operate it, we're looking at about $3 million subsidy, you know, for that service. Not great, but $3 million is about 7% of my operating budget. As you can see, 7% is a pretty big impact that the assembly has to deal with. When we're right now, our current cost, we're about $300,000 a year, so about one-tenth of that to keep it in the current state. We have some challenges. I'm still confident we're going to get there. I'm frustrated we haven't got there yet, but I think it's my job to make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's agreeable to my assembly, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why has it? I guess I'm still struggling with why these buyers haven't been interested. It's just they come and look at it and they think, you know, it's too costly, it's too unique, it doesn't quite fit these different needs. Or is it because you have to find something that will keep you from having to repay the $6 million grant to the Transit Authority, and that's sort of the constraint?
Yeah, the $6 million is a constraint. Essentially, the corporations and companies that have the funds to do something with it are saying, well, we can go afford to to spend our money doing exactly what we need.
Mm-hmm.
The people with the unique ideas that can use the boat don't have the funds to pull it off.
If
you have the money, you can do your own thing. If you don't have the money, well, then you're, you know, kind of coming mm-hmm. up short. I would say that's generalizing kind of what we have. We have some great ideas. We have some ideas that that we smile about, you know, coming forward.
I'm sure you probably get the weird ones over the transom, right?
Yes.
And do you have an asking price that's posted, or just like somebody who can take it away and you don't have to pay for it anymore, you'd be happy?
Currently, right now, we are offering the boat for to a broker for $9 million, but we'll pay a 20% commission on $9 million, which gets us real close to $6 million plus our costs.
Okay. Well, you heard it here, folks. You can have your own unique ferry, and you just need to
get me a $9 million buyer, and you got a $1.8 million commission.
All right. Well, thanks very much. John Moosey, Borough Manager, Mat-Su Borough. Sorry for putting you on the hot seat, but you had some good answers, and I appreciated your time. Warren Keough was with us earlier, a Mat-Su Borough Assembly member, and Lisa Diemer, reporter from the Anchorage Daily News. Next week on Hometown Alaska, Kathleen McCoy will be your host, and the topic will be Alaska Native Women's Leadership. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Kristen Platt is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.